The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Thursday. Second last football show, lads. Stevie and Colin are here as usual. The year's nearly done.
Yeah, the season all went pretty so fast when things are going well.
Yeah, exactly. So we're down to four. We're going to get into talking about the two semi-finals. Personally, I think there should have been a bigger lead up into these two semi-finals. 6 days is outrageous for an All-Ireland semi-final after what Tyrone and Donegal had to go through in a really tough game to be out the following week. Well, Tyrone out the following week, and Monaghan had a handy one, but Tyrone especially are really going to be feeling it. I was reading an interview from Hamsey, and he was saying they were feeling it towards the end of that Donegal game. Now, it didn't look like they were feeling it. Like, I mean, the way he was running, but at the same time, like, I mean, it's a huge turnaround. This is a Tyrone team that have been on the go now for, is it 9 weeks flat out with just a 2 week break? Could be maybe 7, 8, whatever. Yeah, it's been a lot
in round one, like, so
put out early,
qualifiers,
yeah.
Round one, they've been going,
they've
so
been there.
Four qualifier rounds, three Super League games,
extra time against Mead, even at the start of that. Like,
it's,
I mean,
it's certainly going to take its toll. And listen, the semi finals are the second biggest games of the year. You know, a lot riding on it.
Are they bigger than a provincial final? What about the Ulster final, Stevie?
No, I would put a semi-final above that there, absolutely. You
really?
Know, you're one game away from playing in the ultimate, which is the All-Ireland final. So I put a semi-final above winning provincial. I wouldn't disregard the provincials, but 6 days is nowhere near enough preparation time.
But even to build up, and for us to look forward to.
There should always be a build-up. But the one thing that the GAA have done right is put the two games on the same weekend. I think that's a step in the right direction. But give the players more time to lead into it. Let the counties generate, you know, the atmosphere,
the excitement,
and the excitement of it as well.
Especially for Monaghan now and Galway, who are not used to this. Like, Tyrone and Dublin have been in them. Like, how can Monaghan public really get into this? Tyrone didn't have a media day, and they always have it because the turnaround was too fast. So Monaghan and Tyrone, Galway and Dublin supporters love to read the Sunday papers next week and have a, now obviously the media is so tight now, you wouldn't read one maybe from a Dublin player. But, like, I mean, you get my point. You kind of sit down, you go, geez, this time next week we'll be in Croke Park. They've none of that.
There is always that element of excitement in any county, you know, when you're leading up to a big game, particularly of the magnitude of an All-Ireland semi-final. I love to be driving through Monaghan in the next week and seeing all the button and the flags out. And, you know, if they don't get to a final, we might not get the chance to see that much of it.
Yeah, no, well, that's it.
And just, like, even for the players themselves, you know yourself, when you win a big game, you want to sort of enjoy it for a week before you even start thinking. You want to go down to the shops and milk a bit and talk to everybody about the game and, you know, just let the whole thing savour. But it's gone. Like, they might get to the final and great, but they might not either.
And it's a 3 week break to the final where I would go 2-2.
2-2,
I think 2-2 is much fairer from your body point of view. And also, for, like, I mean, I think, while I'm a players man 100%, and that's my reason for 2-2, but for the whole package, the media, the supporters, for the whole thing, 2 weeks and 2 weeks seems much fairer.
It seems to be the, you know, the proper time frame, but the problem that you run into is the hurling final then as well, and they allow two games on the day before a hurling final. You know, Croke Park probably wouldn't let that happen.
Yeah, maybe the two
replays as well, maybe they're worried about.
Oh god. It's too congested.
Yeah.
We'll start giving out. Come here, abusive letters, lads, has been all the rage. We talked about this on Monday's show, and since then Eamon Fitzmaurice has told Owen Sheehan that the contents of some of the letters, and they're saying players received them and said that you should jump off a cliff or whatever. Like, terrible stuff. But, like, I mean, I suppose it would be worse if he said, the next time I see you, I'm going to push you off a cliff. Then I would be getting a little bit I would be getting a lot more concerned about that than just go jump off a cliff, because I'm not going, I won't take that option, actually. I don't want to jump off a cliff. But I don't know, like, I mean, some people might take these to heart. I think if you've reached the level of inter-county football or hurling or management, I think these lads just shrug this off. Like, I mean, this I think this stuff should be laughed at rather than taken seriously. I think he can get very dramatic about this and say, Jesus, isn't this awful? Just laugh at it. Like, I mean, it's not serious. They're idiots. Laugh at the trolls on Twitter. These are trolls from an older generation who are not online, can't abuse you on Facebook, can't abuse you on Twitter. So they sit down and take the time to write a letter. That's their way of communicating. They must be older, because otherwise younger generation can just get, they can get you with a private message on Facebook. I've got them. Never got a letter. Don't know what that says about people from Leash. They're very tolerant.
You can't really block a letter coming to your house, though. You can block people on Twitter. I'm sure you've plenty blocked Wooly.
I only blocked them in extreme circumstances. Yeah. But what about you, Stevie? Have you got them, or any of your Armagh teammates?
I have received letters, but all good wish letters in the past from numerous counties throughout Ireland. I've never received a bad letter, you know, and I don't think it's acceptable for people to be writing letters and sending.
The world is a big bad place.
Exactly.
Right?
I know you said that it's lighthearted cracking players playing at that type of level, a high level of football or hurling, you know, should just shrug it off and laugh it off, whatever. But that's not always the case. There is some people that, you know, maybe suffer from depression, and something like that there can really get them down as well. And that's what you have to consider as well. I noticed Joe McMahon tweeting out a letter that he received.
Yeah.
I tried to read it, and I couldn't possibly read it out. You know, so I only tried to read the first two lines. It says, "Here, what does that actually say?" You know, so you know, he obviously
that was from someone in Kerry. Yeah,
yeah, he obviously took it as a lighthearted bit of crack, anyway. But ultimately, you know, it is the older generation. We know that it's the older generation because that's the only way that they have to communicate with players of that type of skill. But you know, it's nonsense. It's silly stuff.
Yeah. But how did even the letters of appreciation reach your house? Well, how do these people know where you live?
Yeah, I was saying before the show, you know, actually, they didn't know where I lived. They sent them to the club, Clevey County Armagh, and on one occasion, it went to County Armagh, the County Armagh board, and it managed to find its way to me. So, you know, it was something that I appreciated, you know, when you know that, you know, there's people, you know, throughout the country that have a level of respect for you. But at the same time, I know there's lots of people that disrespect what I've done for Armagh as well, and the same with many players. I'm sure there's loads of people who would love to send Joe McMahon letters of respect and gratitude towards what he'd done for Tyrone. But you know, you will have the minute few that, you know, will always have, you know, their gripes about what you've achieved and what you've done and how you've gone about doing it on the football pitch or a hurling pitch. And you know, those will be the ones that will always make their way to you.
The only thing with like Fitzmaurice is, you know, when you're going badly, like, I know he must know he's a good manager, he's had a good career as a player, but when things are going bad and you're under pressure and you're probably doubting yourself anyway, then it compounds it a little bit, doesn't it, when somebody else
he says his wife reads them, or is that John Kiley said that? I'm not sure, one of them. But like, I mean, you don't have to read it if it's coming in. You probably know what it is. Curiosity will get the better of me. I'd read it. Like,
I would certainly be reading it. You know, it's not that you don't have to read it, you want to read
just
it,
just on the
know.
Off chance it could be a nice one, right?
Yeah. but you do want to read it. But you know, you have to take into account as well, you know, the family members as well that, you know, would be reading this. And women obviously take these type of things more to heart than probably what men would do as well. And
would you show the family, like, you know, if I was aiming, I'm not telling them what to do, but if I got a bad letter,
no, you wouldn't show the family. You wouldn't show the family. But look, I'm not a very sensitive person, and I'd be pretty thick skinned, and I would think this is just a lot. Like, I wouldn't take this seriously. But maybe are there people that would take this seriously? Some random person send you a letter. It's not a threat. If you're useless or you're no good, I've been told I'm useless and I've had a terrible career loads and loads of times, hundreds of times, I would say. You're useless, what have you won? And I know I wasn't useless, and I know relatively Laois have never won in All-Ireland. I've no All-Ireland, but no one in Laois in the history of Laois GAA has won. It's not like my group of players didn't achieve what loads of others did. I laugh it off. I wasn't useless. Like, I mean, you're an inter-county player, you're not useless.
I understand that, but you are thick skinned and you probably have a strong mentality. There is players out there who aren't as strong mentally wise that know what you would be, Wooly. And you know, if they are receiving a letter or a tweet or a message on a forum, whatever it may be, that, you know, they're useless or they're crap or no good at whatever it may be, that could affect a player's performance ultimately. If they are going through a rough spell in terms of their performance levels, it could really get them down as well. And I go back to the point I made earlier on, you know, it does lead then to depression in some cases, and that's where I think it needs to be drawn a line. And some of the forums, some of the I suppose the content on the forums goes overboard, and it's amazing that all of these you know, keyboard warriors are hiding behind false names and never really put their own name to these type of messages that they're putting out.
Yeah, well, I would agree on that. At least Twitter, a lot of them have have the balls to have their own name up there. The forums have are completely anonymous, and
but that's why it's a bit weird. Like, you were talking about, you know, you're not useless, and Stevie, I assume you knew you were handy enough as well, but remember you told us a story about the Armagh forum, you know, asking about whether Stevie should be dropped.
Don't bring this up again. No, this really hurts Stevie.
That's what I mean. How does it hurt? Like, you know, how does Stevie McDonald give a shit?
He's weak mentally. He needed a chat with Enda McNulty. This fella was just a weak individual mentally, and the least little thing used to knock him off.
I'll give you an idea of how
Ryan McManaman, he wasn't ready for Ryan McManaman.
I'll give you an idea of how some fans can be fickle. You know, there was, I think it was 2007, there was a forum set up in Armagh.
I think it was 2017.
Should Stephen McDonald be dropped? In this particular game, I was having a nightmare in terms of my scoring, but I was winning every ball. We were playing Louth, and I wasn't scoring. I was kicking the ball short and kicking the ball wide, and then we were losing by 2 points with time almost up. I received the ball and put it in the back of the net, won the game. Benny Tierney walks out, and he hears some man criticising me, you know, up left, right and centre. He's useless, this, he's that, he should be dropped, whatever. The following week I go out and perform well, score one, I think it was 1-5 or 1-6 against Westmeath, you know, had a brilliant game, everything went right for me. Benny Tierney notices the same man walking out through the gates of Cross McGlen, goes over, well, should Stevie be dropped now? He turns around and he says, isn't he a greedy bastard? You're never going to win with some people.
I know.
And every county has those type of fans. You're never going to win no matter how well or how bad you're playing. So, you know, you take that with a pinch of salt. But I think messages being wrote about you is a totally different story, because players can't take it to heart.
But we'll just finish up on this. I do think it's definitely a challenge for management, and it's something players need to be educated on, because it took me a while when I started working in media, where you're reading comment sections and sometimes you're reading forums and things like that. And I'd be thinking, because I was a little bit insecure about it at the start, you might find that difficult to understand. But I finally just had to figure out in my own head that there's always going, like, somebody could actually say, this is lad's useless, worst I've ever seen. The very next one could be really like him.
Yeah.
There's that much of a polar difference that there's no right and wrong. Like, I mean, that's the reality. And
absolutely,
I think players need to realise, if you're told you're useless, you're not. The next fella think you're brilliant. It's just an opinion. And if Twitter has taught us anything, it's a bloody, the range of opinions. Like, I mean, it ranges from hatred to love.
Yeah.
So what's where you, somewhere in between is where everybody fits in.
There's nothing in between in Twitter.
I think players,
just read all the love.
Maybe that needs to be pointed out to players, because like you said, if they do take that personally, they need to realise that this is just this one person's opinion, and he might be a hateful person. This is not to be taken seriously.
But it is the one person's opinion that ultimately sinks in deepest.
It's mad.
Yeah. Well, look, anyways, listen, well, Fitzmaurice was talking about referees as well, and this is something that I thought was interesting, in that we never talked about this before on the show, and he's like, I think we need a second ref. I think we need a second referee again. He's talking to Owen Sheehan. I know the minutiae is mooted that the GAA say, we've two linesmen either side of him, but the linesman can give a certain amount of help. But oftentimes, what's forgotten is they're rivals of the referee, other than a match day. They want to be inside the middle themselves.
Very good.
I never thought about that. And then he says, the fella out in the middle of the field, he's making a bit of a hash of the game. It would be human nature for the fellas on the sideline to be going, Jesus, I might have a better chance to get the next game. Surely to God, that's not happening.
Well, they are referees, and it's very relevant in light of James McGrath coming on RT.
Yeah, well, I was going to hold that for the hurling show.
That's
outrageous. Like, I mean, that's unbelievable. So that just shows you the level of ego that's amongst referees. Yeah. So is a fella on the sideline going, this lad's having a nightmare in the middle, I'll get the next match. I'll get the All-Ireland final. I'd say it would, yeah.
Why do you take up refereeing? Ultimately, to get to the highest level and try to get referee in an All-Ireland final, you don't come out publicly the way the hurling referee come out. That's absolutely ridiculous.
It's an embarrassment.
There's got to be a level of competition there, and there's got to be an ambition to strive to get towards the top. But I would agree with Eamon Fitzmaurice here. There has to be two referees in any inter-county game, particularly inter-county games. It's too hard for any referee to officiate and get everything right. And that's why there's so much hassle. You know, with the speed and the flow of the game nowadays, you know, one referee is nowhere near enough. Two referees officiate at the international rules. It always works well. I know there's probably more bias towards the Australian referees for our teams, but I think it's something that works well. One referee officiate one half of the field, the other referee in the other half, and let it flow. In that regard, one referee might let it flow even more than the other, but that's fine. But I think, you know, the volume of errors, human errors, that would be made would be a lot less than what is being made at the minute.
If the point that Eamon is saying, and that's true, well then, and if we're trying to maybe potentially limit the hand pass or give an offensive mark, you might need to get that bit closer, then maybe two referees, you know what I mean? If they're talking about rule changes, maybe two referees is the way forward. If this level of competition, I don't think there's a need for them with the linesmen. I agree with that point. But why are linesmen not helping the referees more? They've got the eyes. I can't believe, like, and to think, you think about the game an awful lot, that it never even dawned on me that a linesman might be going, here, I'll sell this lad up the river here.
Yeah, and like, sure, how many times would a manager like Eamon Fitzmaurice be standing beside a linesman and saying, look at him punching him in the face there? And the linesman sometimes doesn't want anything to do with it. My problem with referees over the last few years hasn't been that they haven't been able to keep up with the play or anything. So I agree with you, Willie, that the two might not be needed unless you're going to make rule changes. It's when they're just looking at things that they can see. It's a black card and they won't give it. I don't see how a second referee might help with that. The linesman should help with that anyway.
Yeah.
When they see somebody pointing someone and they give them a yellow card, you know, they're just copping out a little bit. Playing the game based on time and circumstance. There's stuff that they should be doing anyway. It's not the pace of the game.
No. And the umpires should be involved more. They should be ex-referees and then you have two more eyes.
They are like club referees anyway, those umpires.
They should be, they should be club referees. But like, I mean, that's the thing. But even on Eamon Fitzmaurice's point, and I remember sitting on the bench watching Leash play. Now, I won't say anyone in particular, because I would have been an all-rounder in the forward, so I would be hoping one of them plays bad.
Yeah.
So I don't care which one it is, because there's a good chance that there'll be a reshuffle or I'll get in. I just need one of these out of these six players. But I'm hoping one of them play bad. And this is a teammate. Yeah,
exactly.
These referees are rivals. They're not teammates. So when you think about it, it's absolutely human nature for them to go, this lad's having a nightmare, and I'm not going
to. Do you play a team game to sit in the subs bench all the time? Absolutely not. You want to be in the starting 15, so you have to have that ambition to get into that starting 15. And if somebody's, you know, playing in your position, you obviously want to get in there and you want to see them making mistakes and making errors. That's natural, you know, and it probably is the same at referees.
Yeah. Well, okay, we'll leave it there. Another quick one here, lads, is I don't want to get into analysis here, but it's the level of which Galway are being written off after losing to Monaghan. Now, like, I mean, Tommy Cara was coming home in the radio and in the car, and I was listening to RT radio, and like, I mean, you've no option but to listen to Tom Cara, but like, I mean, he very rarely says stuff I agree with, but he was saying Galway are inconsistent. They're an up and down team. And like, I mean, Galway have been the most consistent team in the country outside of Dublin this year, so I don't know why he was talking about, but he was basically writing off Galway's chances on the back of this game. Aidan O'Rourke has pretty much kind of written them off. Darragh O'Shea has written them off. Joe Brawley, with his fake news, has completely written them off. And I'm just thinking, like, I mean, I know I tipped Galway to win last week, but I thought they would be more at the pitch of that game than they were. Now, Galway lose double scores to Monaghan at home. Their turnovers were very low. They just weren't at the level of that game.
No.
Does that mean that they're gone here? Like, I mean,
no.
Or do Galway just say, lads, this, we're in the long grass now for Dublin. It's exactly the way we want to go into a game. And this is, like, should it be written off on a game they didn't have to win?
Not so much. We did speak about this last week. We were unsure how Galway would approach the particular game. I don't agree with how they approached the game.
Well, I think they approached it to win it.
Yeah.
But mentally they always had that safety net. They were not at the pitch Monaghan. That doesn't mean they didn't want to win it.
I don't think they approached it to win it. And that's being totally honest with you. But I wouldn't rule them out. You know, they have been very, very consistent over the course of this year. Probably the second most consistent team in the country outside of Dublin. So, you know, have they got a chance in a one-off game? They're playing the best team in the country, you know. So that's why the likes of these pundits and ex-players are writing them off. But, you know, you have to give them a chance. But I think the fact that they lost last week and the manner that they lost, it's going to knock their confidence slightly.
Will it?
Absolutely.
But
will.
What if they just, like, psychologically say, lads, you know as well as I do that we didn't have to win that game. Like, I mean, that was not a serious game. We were true. You weren't at the level you should have been at. just right. Like the management will twist that, yeah, and they'll turn it into a positive now that we're Dublin think we'll have to have us beaten. The whole country's now writing us off. You could actually say that that loss was a massively positive thing for Galway to go into the next game.
Like I just can't imagine the 2 weeks they had between Kildare and Monaghan that they were really going for this Monaghan game. I can't imagine they were talking about that too often because they knew they were in the semi-final.
Yeah.
I can't imagine the change rooms beforehand, you know, that sort of nervous tension. They're through, like it doesn't matter. So like we said on Thursday, there was no way that they could have been at that same level mentally.
It was life or death for Monaghan.
They needed
it. It wasn't like, life or death for Galway. So like it wasn't a 50-50 game. Like, I mean, it was a 60-40 arguably intensity wise. Like, I mean, that's the reality.
Yeah. And just based on what we know for the whole year as well, like you said, like they've been the most consistent team outside Dublin.
Yeah.
I saw Dara O'Shea saying they're going into this Dublin game now not knowing what sort of shape they're in, and I thought, has he missed the whole season?
Yeah.
Like
I agree.
You know what shape they're in.
You do. You know exactly what shape they're in, and you can trust Galway. And they will lose to Dublin, but it won't be because of that Monaghan match. Like, I mean, I would say arguably after the Kildare game, their focus went on to Dublin. Like, I mean, they knew there were probably, you know, there was a good chance. I'd say Dublin were mentioned, or else they're losing 2 weeks of prep for like when you've only got a 6 day turnaround.
It's clear that was the case. You know, we all have our own opinions on it. I don't agree with how they approached that Monaghan game, but it's clear that Kevin Walsh made the decision, this is what we're going to do. We're going to, you know, overlook the fact that we are playing Monaghan. If we win, it's a bonus. If we don't, so what? We're going to be in a semi-final regardless. So we'll start our preparations now, maybe giving them longer opportunity to prepare for Dublin.
Yeah, maybe that was it. Quickly before we move on to a bit of analysis, Les, Jim McGuinness was writing in the Irish Times, and I just couldn't make head nor tail out of what he was saying. So, like, I mean, this is a fella who's pretty much introduced this kind of dour defensive football into the game. Like, I know Tyrone were a little bit defensive with Colin McCullough and Tommy McGuigan. A lot of these dropped back in 08. That was in the final against Kerry, who had a brilliant full forward line, understandable enough. But McGuinness took it to new levels in 2011. That's fair enough. And there's been copycat managers all over the place. So now finally, probably started last year where Dublin kind of figured out. So they've tried a lot of different things. It's like mirror it and only send a certain amount of lads up. And then you've got a dour 10 points to 9 kind of game. Now a lot of teams are evolving to the point where they're committing everybody to attack, and they're not bringing it into the tackle, and they're playing it from side to side. Monaghan showed that they can do that against Galway as well, even though Galway didn't have that many men back, not as many as they used to have. So McGuinness is thinking about this, and he says, this is an aspect of the game I feel needs to be reviewed by coaches everywhere. The game has moved on, and in the winter months it would be time very well spent if there was a serious consideration of whether getting bodies back is enough anymore, or how do we get pressure on the ball. In other words, how do you redress the balance again? So he thinks that the attacking teams are getting the advantage now, and he wants to redress the balance in favour of the defensive teams. Everyone else is talking about how the hell do we maybe think up of a rule change to actually make the game more attractive, but he wants to actually redress the balance to the defence. I nearly wanted to pull my hair out reading this. So he says, I think about the game in general, and it's all about pressure on the ball to turn it over, on the opposition's kickouts, how they get on yours. At the moment, offences are controlling the terms of engagement. Even though there are huge numbers back in defence, they have become redundant. That's bullshit. Defensive teams are still setting the terms of engagement. Like, I mean, the full forward line on the attacking team is an irrelevance.
Yeah.
And that's what everybody's frustrated about. We're talking about potentially brilliant players. Tomás Corrigan can't get on the Fermanagh team. You know what I mean? We're not seeing the top players get proper good kick passes, and the brilliant skills of the game, like catching and kicking in the forwards, is gone now because it's a hand passing game, a game of chess outside the defensive screen, and all the great skills of the game are gone. And this fellow wants to redress it more back to the defensive. Like, that's outrageous. I couldn't believe what I was reading.
Yeah, and like, it's a little bit sad because the time in the winter would be better spent trying to figure out how to score more than the other team, like how to emphasise this imbalance that he thinks there is,
or how you make sure you have a half forward line to transition better through the foot, like Donegal have tried to do this year, like Galway were able to do against Kildare but weren't able to do so much against Monaghan. Why was that? Like, all these different questions. Offensively, he wants to actually come back and decide how these 14 players camped inside their 45 can actually get more pressure on.
Because I saw him writing this thing, was he was a bit worried that they were the ones that were getting tired. Remember Donegal used to sit back and they just watch teams run into them because their teams weren't moving around, so they were the teams that had all the energy. So now he's worried that they're chasing the ball because the others are just passing it around. But yeah, I just like, for me, I think that these defensive systems are going away. Like, I know you're still, you know, you want it quicker, but yeah. I think I almost agree with him to a point that I do think the offense is sort of controlling it now, and they're smarter, and Dublin are showing the way, and they are showing if we don't run into this, then they're going to have to do something else. Like, and I do think that having 13 men back is becoming a little bit more useless. And I don't know what Jim McGuinness's plan would be to redress that. I don't think there is one. Like, I just think you have to start thinking of a way to score more than the other team again.
Yeah, I think that's it.
You look at the facts over the last 2 years, aggressive teams that, you know, have it in their mindset that they want to attack and outscore their opponents have been the more successful teams. And, you know, over the winter months, what I'd be encouraging the coaches and the managers to do is to think outside the box in terms of how they can encourage more of a kick passing style, how they can set up their teams more offensively and to go to win games instead of, you know, trying to, you know, limit teams, limit their opponents and try to keep the score down as low as possible, you know, to give their team a best chance. You know, we all know the amount of copycat coaches that we've seen in the last 5-6 years. To see one team having success with it, which was Donegal, and then every coach in the country almost thinks that this is automatically going to get success for our team. That's bullshit. You know, coaches and managers have to think about what is best for their own team. And the way it is at the minute, and the more successful teams at the minute are playing a more attack minded game.
And I do take your point that the offences, like, are becoming, you know, obviously smarter about it. But three of the four teams in the All-Ireland semi-finals are getting everybody bar two back behind the ball. Why are they doing that if there's not joy to be got by doing that? They absolutely are doing it because it works. If you have, like, 13 men back behind the ball, like, obviously, what they're all trying to do now is achieve this kind of game plan where they can do both kind of well. Exactly. I don't really have a problem with that. I still think you need to leave four up and defend with everybody else. I think that's the balance. No one's doing that.
Yeah, but
no one's doing the four.
You look at the pace at which those teams break at, and I use the word they're aggressive. They are very, very aggressive in the tackle, which hurts their opponents when they actually make contact with them. It's not just that there's, you know, timid tackling going on. They are very, very aggressive in it, and that's why they're allowed to break at pace as well, because their opponents are still physically sore from being overturned.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Like, I mean, but at the same time, I don't think it's helpful from Jim McGuinness to be writing pieces like that if he's got influence like that. That maybe just because it doesn't agree with my kind of outlook, maybe he's not wrong. But surely you can't be encouraging the balance to be kind of leaning back towards defences when that's all we've had for feckin' 6 years.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, like, the thing is with every sport around the world, like, the weak teams are defensive. Like, that will always happen. They'll be defensive and conservative and trying, you know, like we talk about Cardo, that should be the way it is in GAA. It should be the weakest teams that are doing it to try and give themselves a chance. But I hope and I think it is happening now over the next couple of years. Monaghan are starting to come away from it. They're a bit more like Dublin, and they're getting men back with the ball. They're tracking all these runners. The fluidity is a problem as well, because people are going up and down. But maybe once teams start coaching more offensively, then the ball will be kicked faster.
Yeah. Like, I really thought the obvious thing that, which we kind of analysed a lot last year, and it was nearly the theme of the show, was you need a presence on the half forward line, or you can't make that transition fast from turnover to your full forward line. Yeah. Without that half forward line, regular half forward line, and fellas running over left and right on the half forward line, you can't move the ball really fast down the field. You have to work it through the hand. I've seen no evidence of teams leaving somebody on the half forward line outside of Galway, who leave Shane Walsh there, maybe, you know? Like, I mean, they're not doing it. Monaghan still aren't doing it. Tyrone still aren't doing it. So, like, I mean, that's a really disappointing thing for me, that they haven't evolved onto that, for me, very obvious. Even just one lad there. They haven't done that, because maybe they need. Then again, you see Galway against Monaghan, who left three up. They were down a body in the defence. They're shipping 16 points. Like, I mean, but are they saying, right, we've got too much of a gap there, we need that extra body? Or are they saying, well, it doesn't matter if we concede a point, because we'll score more on the other? You know what I mean? I don't think the attitude here is, we will score more by doing this. Only Eamon Fitzmaurice said it. If we play a sweeper, well, then they'll play a sweeper and we might not score more than that. You know, that yeah. we yeah. Like the attitude is still keep the score down yeah. rather than how do we outscore them.
But it's about getting the balance right again. So it is, you know, the majority of teams that drop their two wing half forwards back, you know, those two wing half forwards know exactly what their role is in the team and know exactly where they need to be positioned. A lot of teams who drop multiple players back, you know, they're passing responsibility around a lot of the time. They don't know exactly where they're meant to be or how they're meant to tackle or, you know, how to break out when they get the ball. But I think the teams that leave four players up, you know, the team and drop the two wing half forwards back, you know, are probably a wee bit more organised and know exactly how to play the role to greater effect.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Kildare used to leave four up and now they've gone back to just leaving the two Flynns up and everybody else is working. So they've tried that and they've moved away from it. Although maybe they're following their men as well. Right, listen lads, we've gone over time on top of the show. We'll be back and we'll talk about Dublin Galway first.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens yeah. and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot and the best thing you can do is keep moving, and I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show, it didn't look great, there was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible and unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain,
100% reason to remember the name. So all the talk about Galway, lads, as we mentioned at the top of the show, is that they're after being found out that they're beaten well at home. They're up against Dublin now and they're going to be well beaten. Now the handicap is 6. We'll talk about predictions in the next part. But like, I mean, when you look at the Monaghan match, they're missing Johnny Heaney, who I think who was a very big loss, a very important player in their system. Michael Daly, my information is that he trained last night. Now think of the impact he had at the start of that Kildare game. This is an outstanding young player, like really, really highly rated. This is the type of player that you hear about from another county, you know, before while he's still an under 21. You know these really good lads that you hear word of, that this lad's a real good player.
Coming through schools.
He's coming back. He's back. I'd say he'll start, because then you would have a half forward line of Brannigan, Michael Daly and Johnny Heaney. Right, like, I mean, that's a serious, serious half forward line, and that Michael Daly will mean the Dublin centre half back can't drop as much as he wants to. Right, so we saw how much Comer caused them problems in the league final. Galway in the league final were a much more defensive team than what they are now. In the league final, they left Comer up on his own. Dublin put back a sweeper in front of him, and Comer was completely out of the game after the first 15 minutes. Now they have Ian Burke. Ian Burke wasn't around for the league. Now they'll definitely leave two up. I think Shane Walsh will play out in front of them, who might drop and plug up a gap. But you have Michael Daly and Johnny Heaney back plugging gaps. Two big 6'2", kind of, you know, big size of men. I think Galway are just going to be a completely different proposition this weekend. That intensity will be back. Croke Park, All-Ireland semi-final. If you can't get up for that and get hands on, like, I mean, I think we'll see a completely different Galway. Now, I still think it's Dublin versus the handicap, unfortunately. But I think Galway could get inside the six.
Yeah, like, the thing is, when you're analysing Dublin games, we always get excited about the opposition because you're just thinking, can they hurt them in any way? And I do, I'm really glad it's Galway that are playing them.
Me too.
I think Tyrone and Monaghan, like, as big a fan as I am of them, they can't beat Dublin playing like that. Dublin will just outworky and...
This, arguably, sorry to cut you off, but this could be the one year where everybody goes, this is almost an unfair championship. If Dublin convincingly beat Galway, and I know you'll be the defensive of Ulster, they will beat either Tyrone or Monaghan by 7 points minimum in Croke Park in the final. That's, for me, I think there's nothing sure. Mayo not being in the championship this year is a disaster for the championship, because after a brilliant All-Ireland final, you kind of look back on the year and go, geez, wasn't that great? Even though a lot of it wasn't, but Mayo would have saved it. I can't see any of the three teams left saving the championship. Galway, I think, have the best chance, because I think they have a better balance between defence and attack.
Yeah, and like just what you're saying there about Shane Walsh, like, it just gives them that platform that other teams aren't using, because Dublin can just run faster than you coming back and they tackle harder than you. And then when you have Comer and Burke inside, I just look at Laois. Like, Dublin fans will probably laugh that we keep harping back to the Laois game, but Laois had a tactic. They got the ball into the big men, they put it in early, and it worried Dublin for a bit. And it got in, like, you know, it gave you a chance of scoring. And if Galway have not only a good defensive system, but they have a platform, and then they have Comer and Burke inside, two of the best ball winners in Ireland, it's exciting.
And that's the thing, is when the sweeper went back the last time in front of Comer, I think it could have been Cooper, he only had Comer to worry about. Like, arguably Burke is the one you want to be in front of here, because Burke makes them tick. Burke will get the ball, win it out in front, he'll hold it up until someone's running off his shoulder, which will be Heaney, which will be Brannigan, which will be Walsh, and they're gone. Like, I can see Galway causing Dublin all sorts of problems. I really can. Like, if Donegal caused them problems, Galway have more pace and better forwards within a system than Donegal have.
Burke is the brains up there. There's no doubt. You know, he knows where to be. He knows how to you know, create space for his teammates. He can win his own ball. He can link player. You know, he is definitely brains. While Comer caused serious harm in the first 15 minutes until Dublin actually swept in front of him. So, you know, if Dublin think that playing a sweeper in front of Comer is going to stop the threat, you can be sure of one thing, that Ian Burke will be out round, filtering in round that sweeper and not letting him have an influence on the game.
He's smart enough to do that. Then, like I've said before, you'll have Heaney, Brannigan and Daly, who are good athletes who will get back to plug up space, but will absolutely get back up that field. You know what I mean? And engage that Dublin half back line and make sure they're being marked. And then you've got maybe six on. You know what I mean? I think Galway, and then you have midfield. Cook will man mark James McCarthy. Cook is a big strong physical man who'll give James McCarthy all he wants. If it'll be in his face, I think he'll man mark James McCarthy. And you have Tomás Flynn, who can easily compete with Fenton in the air and is as fast on him in the ground. So from midfield up, I think Galway are a great match for Dublin. Where I would worry about Galway is their six backs are not a match for Dublin's forwards. But then that's where Brannigan, Heaney, Flynn, Cook, and all Cook will have to man mark McCarthy. Then you've the other lads dropping in to help out the defence.
Name me any defence that's a match for Dublin six forwards at the minute. There's very, very few. There's none, actually, so there isn't. And that's why Galway have to drop bodies back in big numbers to break forward at pace. But you know, you have to, the longer time goes on and Dublin win more and more games, you know, eventually they are going to be caught in the hop. Is it going to be this Sunday? I don't think it is. You know, I still think that, yes, Galway will put it up to them, they'll fight with them, and they'll cause them harm, and particularly with players like Burke and Comer up front, you know, you're going to cause a team a level of harm. But have they got, you know, the experience and the know-how to beat Dublin in Croke Park in the All-Ireland semi-final? I just don't think that they have. And even though Dublin are playing with a lot of younger boys this year, I still think that their experience is invaluable coming into an All-Ireland semi-final, and just know how to use the space of Croke Park. They know how to spread the ball wide. Players know how to take themselves out of position and drag men with them and stand in a position where they know they have no influence in the game, but they will allow that to happen until the play breaks down. And, you know, McCarthy is one of the key players at doing that there. If you watch him closely, you know, he will drift into a corner, stand there for maybe 30 seconds until the play breaks down, but just simply to drag a man out of the way. And they're just too smart for other teams at the minute.
They're too smart for that defensive system. That's why I think Galway will be making a mistake to be really packing the defence. Like, I mean, they have to leave the two lads up front, but they have to have that transition player. And the perfect transition player who played so well against Kildare is Shane Walsh. Walsh is a fella who tries to hold the 45. Now, he can drift back in if his man is going forward. He has to plug up a hole, he'll do that. But he has to always be ready when that ball's turned over, that he's back in the half forward line and he's breaking left and right to get on ball and then turn and give it in. Then you're beating the Dublin drifting defence. Conan's right. You look at Monaghan and Tyrone, you'll never beat Dublin at a running game. You just won't. They're too big. They're too fit. They're too strong. The only way to do it is get it back up that field where they're vulnerable. Like, Laois showed they're vulnerable because they don't pack zonal. They play a sweeper. They didn't even play a sweeper against Laois until Kingston started causing trouble. I do think they play a sweeper this time, but without getting the ball through the foot up to Walsh as your starting point, and then Walsh giving good ball into Comer and Burke, they have no chance of beating Dublin. So Galway just have to realise, and I don't think Tyrone or Monaghan, they're sitting ducks their game plan because they won't change their game plan. Galway have a chance of actually really troubling Dublin. I hope they just go for it. I hope they go for it and actually just try to get goals against Dublin. If they get goals, they need goals.
But it can't be a case that it's that predictable of just kicking the ball up at the half forward line and then kicking it into the full forward line. I think Shane Walsh's great ability to run at players as well, and he can create frees for his team.
Ah, yeah, well, Shane can take his man on in that situation.
Comer can take his man on, Burke can take his man on. All capable players to take their men on and win frees as well. But those three players, for Galway to have any chance, have to be a 9 out of 10 rating. At least a 9 out of 10 rating this weekend for Galway to get across the line. And yes, they have great ability, to great potential, but with those three players being a 9 out of 10, what's the rest of the players going to do to support that as well? And that's the difficulty.
They all need to be honest. But would you keep Shane Walsh on the 45? Because the Dublin halfback line will just take men all over the pitch. Most of them are just doing sprints and they're not looking for the ball, but he's dragging you. And that's why I'm a bit worried about Brannigan and Heaney, who are obviously some of the fittest players in Ireland, but you have to, just mentally as well, when you're tracking McCaffrey and all these players, it's trying to be up for it again. Then they go full whack the other way, knowing that you're going to be coming back down.
Heaney and Brannigan won't even track. Heaney and Brannigan drop and they're back there beforehand. Yeah. So when you look up with Galway, right, they'll have a line of maybe 7 lads along the 45. Mm. They might not even have a sweeper in front of the full forward line, but that's where they're trying to stop you. They're trying to stop you around that 45 area. You can't get through. There's probably a pop pass over them.
Yeah.
And Keane Ward often talks about this, and you can see it on the television. You're like, Jesus, they've got this swarmed. Even against Tyrone, suddenly a little ball over that thing. But then again, the problem with that is when your man wins it in there, he's only running back out towards all these lads anyway. So they're safe enough in that they don't need someone covering, because it needs to be a bloody brilliant ball that your man can win it and actually be turned before somebody kind of grabs him, running back in towards the goal. So it is an interesting one. I think the Galway will go defensive is, like they always do, is that their three halfbacks won't follow their men at all. So the Dublin half forward line is going to have a free roll. The Galway halfback line hold the halfback line. In fact, they'll just drift a little bit inside the halfback line. Then Brannigan, Heaney, Flynn and Cook will all drop on there. So you'll have Brannigan, you'll have Johnny Heaney, you'll have Cook, you'll have Flynn, and you'll have your half back line all around there. So you have 4+, you have 7 lads along that kind of half back line. And that's enough bodies in there, really, unless Cook is going to be detailed to man mark McCarthy and McCarthy drags him out, they're then a body down, But I do think that there's enough there. If the intensity levels, and they showed in the league final physically they can match up to Dublin, which is a hugely important thing.
It's just such a big pitch as well. Than ever, you need that link. Jason Doherty just came into his own for Mayo, because he's just there in the 45 winning ball. You always just need that person to make the pitch smaller.
If Kevin Walsh is smart enough, he's going to definitely leave Shane there. He has to leave Shane Walsh there to be
out in front. Didn't work. And I mentioned this on Monday's show, it didn't work against Monaghan leaving three up, because Varley was the link man. Mm-hmm. Varley's no pace, so he couldn't get out in front of his man. So when they looked up, there was nobody there to bridge that gap. And number two, they just didn't get enough turnovers. They didn't get good ball in the half forward line that had these breaks on. And number two, if they did, Varley's not the man that's going to be showing. He's not able to get out in front, where Walsh will always be out in front. Yeah. It's impossible for him not to be out in front. It'll be interesting to see who Dublin put on all these lads. I'd say Merchant will probably mark Ian Burke, size-wise, speed-wise. Merchant has showed himself to be a really good player out around broken play. Now, being man marked out around broken play, I always use to find a nightmare. You're out there trying to get on handy ball and get a hand pass and make things happen. You're being man marked. So when you're being man marked out there, no one passes you the ball. Sometimes I used to say, when I was being man marked, just give it to me. I don't care if he's behind me. I'll win it and I'll turn him. Without giving it to me, I can't get in the game.
Yeah.
He's on top of me. But yourself, when you look up, a lad that has a man right beside him being run, you won't give it to him. It's easier to give a lad that's completely free. And if you're being man marked, you're never completely free. So even if you're being man marked, sometimes just give you to, if he's your danger man, give it to him even though he's being man marked. Good players don't care about being man marked. They'll turn them. That's what they're getting this all their lives. But the point I'm making is that Merchant in the full back line on Burke will have no fear of being man marked in there, because he's always been man marked in there. And you will give it to a full forward being man marked quicker than you'll give it to a lad out around the midfield being man. Am I making sense?
If a full forward isn't being man marked, then you've got a serious
problem. Then there's something wrong. So you're used to looking up and seeing a lad right behind one. You're given that anyway. But my point is, when you're being man marked around the midfield, you won't just hand pass it to a lad that has a lad stuck beside him.
Merchant will have ball to deal with.
So Merchant will have a much more difficult job if he's on Burke.
Would it be Cooper on? I was sort of thinking it might be Johnny.
I think
Cooper.
Philly's the man for that. He's the strength for Comer.
I thought Cooper would go on to Burke.
I think Cooper will sweep. I think Cooper might sweep.
That was like the league final, wasn't it? McMahon was on Comer, if I'm right.
It was, yeah. I think a couple of lads mark Comer.
Yeah, height wise, he's not going to get a lot of joy out of any high ball that goes into Comer, because, you know, he's just an overpowering presence in there. But if McMahon plays it cool and allows the likes of Johnny Cooper to come in and double mark as well, you know, they can really,
I think Keane O'Sullivan will pick up Walsh. If Walsh plays the fella in front of the two, Keane O'Sullivan has the pace for him and has the size for, and, like, I mean, who's ever gotten the better Keane O'Sullivan realistically? Like, I can't remember anyone who's actually consistently got the better of Keane. You just don't do it.
Shane Walsh has the ability to really, you know, put him on his back foot and push him close. You know, he definitely has the ability to put Keane O'Sullivan on the back foot, I think.
Oh no, he does. Yeah, he has that game. But then again, we like, Shane Walsh has obviously been outstanding in the Connacht final. Then was outstanding against Kildare. Was outstanding against Kerry.
Yeah.
So he's in good form.
He is. Yeah.
He needs to stand up. The confidence is there. Shane Walsh, he was had a disaster against Monaghan. But again, I think psychologically they'll just be saying, forget about that. Let's get out there. Like, I mean, is it? I wish it had been the final. I don't want to run down Monaghan or Tron, who are very good teams, but I just cannot see how either of those teams can beat Dublin.
I think it makes the semis better, because I think this game is more evenly matched, and then the other semi is class.
But you see, I would actually be thinking differently, and it's not my northern bias coming out here, but I just think that Throne are probably a step closer than what Galway are. Yes, Galway have a finer balance and a better balance from attack to defence in their team, and I wouldn't deny that, but I just think Mickey Hart in an All-Ireland final is a very, very shrewd character and one of the best. He's never lost an All-Ireland final, so
Tyrone would have the mentality, I'll give you that, but outside, they don't have the game. They have the mentality, they won't be scared. Tyrone are, like, we know what all Tyrone's qualities
are. They'll win fearless and they'll go in totally believing that they are the only team in Ireland that capable of beating Dublin. I would at this stage tend to agree that out of the three teams left, I get up that's going to come up against Dublin, I think Tyrone are probably the team that ultimately can get it across the line and in a one off game, but I can't see it happening.
We'll talk about Tyrone in a minute, but just finally on this one, lads, is one big worry for Galway, and that is Lavelle's kickouts. The pressure Dublin are going to put on those kickouts, and he's not an expert. Like, he's not in the Cluxton, in the Beggin, even in the Niall Morgan, he doesn't have a range. He doesn't have that long punt that could maybe get over this screen and set up. Like, Beggin does it, like a big, like, press doesn't scare Beggin at all. It's almost Beggin wants that because he can hit past it to a lad on the run. Cluxton used to be able to do it. Cluxton just happy enough to take the tap to the corner back now, and Galway give the most of them. It's only from freeze Galway will really be able to push up, because I think they'll be chasing their tails, and Cluxton's so fast at getting the ball from the goals and just tapping it to Johnny Cooper, you're gone from play. Like, the ball's sailing over the bar and Cluxton has another ball and he's gone out on the tee, bang, done. And Cluxton is so, like, Cluxton, you say, for example, a forward would have an ego and he'd like to take on a hard shot. Cluxton has no ego. Cluxton could show us this array of kickouts. Yeah. He doesn't. He just takes the Cooper because it's a 100% guaranteed possession. Yeah. Like, if that's a quality Cluxton has, because it would be so easy for Cluxton to be slow with the tee, put it down on the tee, have a look around, have everyone in Croke Park watching him. Oh, isn't he such a brilliant kickout specialist? And then hit someone. He doesn't do it.
But the whole country knows that.
I know they know it, but he could buy into that, but he doesn't. Yeah. And that's a huge quality from him.
All of them could buy it. Like, you know, they all have that quality where none of them want to show off, and it's unbelievable because you got the best players in the country, but none of them really want to make it about them. It's just constant process.
Yeah. I think there's maybe a fear with them as well, in that if it turns over and they can see the score, they're blamed for it, so they're just taking that corner back off to go, Jesus, well, there's one anyway, so I'm at 100% now. You know what I mean? There might be a bit of that as well. It's like, Jesus. But I do think Dublin can get an awful lot of joy from Lavelle's kickouts. We talked about it last week, their weird tactic of Cook and Flynn standing over in the sideline, and Lavelle's looking around, he's hoping for a short one, and it's these small little ones in front when the fella who gets it is collecting it and heading towards his own goal. So you're turning around, whereas the Beggin and the Cluxtons can hit lads on the run you're heading towards the other goal. Lavelle can't do that, and his last case scenario then is to kick it long out to the two midfielders and hope Flynn catches it.
It's such an underage tactic, just, isn't it? It's like, get it out to the wing, so if we lose it, we're not in trouble out there. But it worked against Kerry, but it worked because they won the breaks, and you don't normally win the breaks against Dublin, so it is a worry going into this game. I don't see them dominating.
If they are going to go with that type of kick out and come back across the goals, you can imagine the intensity that Dublin forwards are going to be putting on their defence to overturn them and really punish them. And if there's a team that will punish you now at the minute, it's going to be Dublin.
Here's another one quickly now, because I meant to talk about this Monday and I forgot, and it just popped into my head. When, remember, Peter Hart took a free last week for Tyrone in the second half. I don't know, it was Lee Brennan on the field at the time, but I think Hart took a free, and the very next kick out, it's hard to tell on the television, but it was kicked out the very far wing from where Hart took it, and it was Hart frantically trying to get across.
Yeah,
so you know the way everyone says the best time to push up is when you have a free. But say if Dean Rock is taking a free and everybody's pushed up, where's Dean Rock's man? He should be at the far side of the field waiting for.
But Dublin, Dublin will work on communication so much that they're obviously going to filter that man across. They're going to just make the call, and somebody else will just drift out there. Dublin don't let that happen.
But they sort of overload it, don't they? Yeah. They have four across the full forward line, so Rock is just sort of filling in between them, and
he's just filling in. Yeah, but like, I mean, if you can go to the half back line, there'll be a Galway player free somewhere. The reality of it, that's the way it is, and there's four.
Is he not free back in the Dublin defence? Like, so they've pushed so many players up and they've left that guy free.
Oh, they might have pushed an extra man up there. Yeah, well, that would save it. If they're doing that really aggressive thing where they're leaving two forwards and bringing everyone up, well, then that. But if you're just pressing up everybody, you know, the man for man, say.
Absolutely. Without teams to play smart, you know, you would expect a defender knowing that, right, this is a scoreable free. I'm going to make myself available for the kicker. He should be using his head and getting himself into a pocket of space where he knows he's a viable option for the kicker. Not too many teams take the risk on that there. Not too many defenders want to take the risk on that there. And not too many defenders actually think that way as well.
Yeah. Okay, right. We'll come back and we'll do Paddy Power predictions and obviously do analysis on Monaghan Tyrone. Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got,
because I don't want no 1 minute man. So I don't know about the two of you, but Monaghan and Tyrone, when I think Monaghan and Tyrone, I think Tyrone, oh, they've got the Indian sign over Monaghan and, you know, they'll be favourites. Yep. And I'm basing that on the two quarterfinals they beat them in 13 and 15 in Croke Park. But Malachy O'Rourke was talking this week and he says, since 2013, we've played Tyrone four times in the championship and both of us have won two each. We've played them three times in the National League. We've won twice and they've won once. There's nothing between the teams, so we don't see Tyrone as our bogey team in any way. You're right that they have beaten us in Croke Park, so that's another challenge for us to get over. I didn't think it was that close. In my head, Monaghan had a psychological issue with Tyrone.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember the game in Clonus. Monaghan beat them in the championship and they beat them in Omagh this year. And the league matches I don't really remember too much, but according to Malachy, it's 2-1 to Monaghan.
Yeah.
So Monaghan have nothing to be fearing about Tyrone.
No, not in recent times, not in Malachy O'Rourke's time.
That's all we're talking about.
I think he has to be given huge credit for how he has continuously, year on year, improved that Monaghan team and instilled more in belief in that Monaghan team. And as we spoke about earlier on, you know, they're playing with more of a freedom than what they've ever played with this year. And they will go into this game, particularly given the fact that they beat Tyrone already this year, with total belief. Total belief, and know that if they play to a level of performance that they are capable of, that they can't be thrown. So they won't have any fear going into Croke Park this weekend.
I think I've been guilty of it as well, just thinking Tyrone have it over them. But the problem is that in 13 and 15, Monaghan were Ulster champions and then lost to Tyrone.
That was the letdown,
so
it seemed like that.
But they're better than they ever were. They're a different team the 3 years on, so it isn't really the same thing anymore. And they're not Ulster champions coming into this one. So.
And sometimes on the high of winning a provincial title, you know, the celebrations, whatever, you know, your next performance does take a lull, and that was obviously the case with Monaghan against Tyrone on those occasions as well.
Yeah, exactly. Saw a headline there during the week about Tyrone are stumbling on their best team. And the talk was about Bradley and Lee Brennan and McGeary and these lads. But then I was looking back at Tyrone Monaghan in Omagh this year. Lee Brennan and Mark Bradley were on that. Like, that was their best team. Yeah. That is just Lee Brennan. Mark Bradley got injured, or Lee Brennan carried an injury into that game.
Yeah.
McGeary is the only one that you'd say is pushing in there, and he's been getting runs in most games. where do you fit him on the team would be my question, because Myler, I would say, is a guarantee to man mark Carl O'Connell. Like, he's picked wing forward, he often plays wing back, but he's the perfect fella just to go you follow him. He did it last week with Ryan McHugh, and let's be honest, did a very good job on Ryan McHugh. Ryan McHugh got one from play. I know he set up Murphy's goal, but that wasn't Myler's fault. Do you know, Myler did a good job. He has to. Carl O'Connell is as important to Monaghan as Ryan McHugh is to Donegal.
Yeah, and Mickey Hart always has one or two players in his teams that he really, really trusts to go and do man marking duties. And Conor Myler is that player, and that in this particular Tyrone team, they really go and put the stamp on O'Connell breaking forward. Because we know in his position this year, O'Connell has been one of the best players at driving forward and getting key scores for his team. So, you know, he definitely needs a player that has the influence, such as Myler, to really stamp that authority out.
Yeah, a lot of the talk since last week as well is the Tyrone bench. Personally, I think it's completely overplayed. I don't think Tyrone have a brilliant bench by any manner of means. They scored 2-5, and it's very easy to throw a stat like that, 2-5. And sometimes you might look at Dublin's bench and they score 2-5, but that's like maybe someone like Paul Flynn coming on, dominating the game. Costlow playing brilliantly. You know, Bernard Brogan, all these lads. Like, when you look at that 2-5, Lee Brennan got 3 points of it. One was a free. Lee Brennan made a huge impact. There's no one questioning that. Kieran McGeary made an impact. There's no one questioning that. But can you say that Harry Loughran made a huge impact? He scored a palm goal that he didn't work for. And then you have
At the same time, you got to get yourself in that position.
Yeah, but then you've Declan McClure. I'm talking about dominating games, not just getting yourself into a position. Declan McClure palmed in another goal at the last kick of the game. So there's your 2 goals. Now you're down to 5 points. Then you're down to Lee Brennan's 3, who we're saying did. It's not really the impact that everybody's making out like. I mean, it's not nowhere near a potent bench on the level that we analysed Dublin on.
I would say Lee Brennan was very, very sharp coming off the bench.
So he changed the game. He that's a proper impact. So
And the likelihood is, you know, he should be starting anyway, and he probably will be starting this weekend. You know, so I would say yes, he had an impact, and probably more so than any of the other players. I think they've got a good bench. They haven't got the classy bench that, you know, people are making it out to be this week. But, you know, there is games that Mickey Hart has made plenty of changes, and they haven't come off the bench and made an impact the way last weekend changed in their advantage. But, you know, when it changes in your advantage and works that way, you know, you're always going to be credited for it anyway.
Yeah.
I think what Tyrone have is they have like 5 superstars, and then I think they have like another 15 players. Yeah. So they have about 20 players that are all at the same level outside of those 5. And that's sort of what makes their bench so good, is that they don't lose legs then. So these boys come on, they keep the same job going for 75 minutes, and so it's not really their bench that's dominating games, it's just that they're keeping at the same intensity because they're not really losing anything by bringing these boys on.
Yeah,
but it's still reliant on the five, like
on the five best players,
Donnelly, all these boys.
No, I'd say that's fair enough. Now, even talking about both of their systems, they're like, I mean, they play the same system in that they leave two forwards up, which will move to one the odd time. Like, they're kind of, McManus will always stay up, and one forward for Tyrone will always stay up, whoever he is, McCalliskey sometimes. But, like, I mean, sometimes they will be defending with everybody bar one, and there will be occasions where everybody's back on both teams. Sometimes that's because of attacking cornerbacks, other times that's just because they drift back in. I don't really know why, they seem to just do it. But one thing I would say, the difference between the two teams is Monaghan seemed that little bit more comfortable on the outside of the defensive screen. I always find Tyrone's system, and they're the best in the country at a really fast break. You know what I mean? They're lethal through the hands and they'll blow you away. But you never see Tyrone patiently going on the out. Well, you do see it, but they don't never seem all that comfortable with it. And I always think, maybe I'm thinking more against Dublin, where it's really hard to get through them. But I'm always thinking, with a team like Tyrone, knowing they're going to face this, how you don't necessarily see them spread the field and keep the three lads outside.
Yeah.
You don't see that from Tyrone. It's always a little bit disorganised how they get through. And they know they're going to face it based on the way they play.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It doesn't look like panic if it's not done within 15 seconds.
If they don't get that break, I don't think they're as good as Monaghan being outside the 45.
They probably don't play with the same type of patience than what Monaghan do. And that comes with experience, you know, as well. Tyrone would probably have younger players on the field. than what Monaghan would have. So that comes with experience of playing high level games as well.
Yeah, maybe it does, but maybe it just seems to me that Monaghan work on that bit more.
Like, so
Dublin showed us last year the blueprint for this, and like, I mean, it changed all the analysis for me. I always thought when you played a defensive team, you had to mirror them, and that was the analysis I went with for 2 or 3 years. But then that's a stalemate. Then Dublin showed you don't have to mirror them. You can actually commit loads of lads forward. The most important thing is that you don't give away the turnovers they need, and by leaving 2 or 3 on the outside as the out ball in case they get hands on, just get it. The minute you have the hand on you, get it away. Don't give them that turnover. Then the analysis for me has started to change. Don't be afraid to leave loads of lads up there. Just as long as you do not bring that ball in contact, and there's always someone on your outside to ship it away to. Monaghan seemed to me, the point I was making, to have taken those tactics on more than Tyrone.
I was really impressed with them against Galway. They look like an AFL team, you know, when like they throw the ball away as soon as somebody's about to nail them. And it's like they're not allowed to be caught in possession.
Yeah.
Like, that was like, as soon as they saw a maroon jersey, it was scrambled away. And
scrambled away. Isn't it gas how quickly the minute they're just but there's always someone out there.
And that's what, like you said, that last year, Dublin had the two boys in the wing the whole time, and the two boys in the 45.
So as outballs.
So I don't know if Monaghan are working exactly on that, but they always had that out.
In fairness to Dublin, that was innovation from them.
Yeah.
And like, there's always managers who come up with, so Eamonn Fitzmaurice innovated this aggressive press up where you'd abandon their players. And Dublin do that now. There's always every year someone will show you something you hadn't thought of. And from an analysis point of view, I hadn't thought of bringing everybody up there. I've always been of that conservative mindset that if they're leaving two back, you leave two back and catch them when they're on the break. The other way is don't give them breaks and have enough lads up there that you'll never be turned over. Because when you don't send everybody up, there's a much bigger chance that you don't have that fella to throw it back to, and you're getting turned over.
And I suppose the thing with Tyrone is probably cripples them, is that Monaghan have, say, McManus inside, so people are worrying about him. Dublin have everybody inside, so people are worrying about them. Tyrone don't really have anybody who's bothering teams too much, so maybe there's more pressure on them out the field.
I do think now, if it's hard to, what do you think Lee Brennan's going to start, lads? Because let's be honest, Lee Brennan struggles in that system, because I know he played well now Donegal's game had opened up. I think he'll be kept in reserve, because like, I mean, the impact he had against Donegal, he hasn't been having those impacts during the league. He's been tipping over a point or two, but a lot of time my memories of Lee Brennan during the league is that he's getting the ball out around the 45, soloing it once or twice and hand passing it off back, and that's not Lee Brennan. He hasn't been able to get ball close to the goal. And we know Tyrone are very conservative in the first half of games, and they're feeling it out. And it's only in the second half, often because they have to, or often because the opposition tires and they're killing them, then Lee Brennan will get on ball. I think Lee Brennan will get more possessions by coming on in the second half than he might in a whole game from start, and it could end up being taken off with 20 minutes to go when you don't want, you need Lee Brennan.
That could be the case, but the game could be away from Tyrone at that stage. You know, Lee Brennan, no doubt about it, is a lot better closer to goal and is more dangerous closer to goal. His impact coming off the bench last week has to be taken into consideration as well. You know, it looks like there's a player playing with confidence, player on form. So you have to, you know, maybe give him an opportunity to start a game. Mickey Hart, you know, doesn't generally go into games of this scale, you know, without trying one or two different things. And you could imagine that he may start him. I would start him. So what? I would start Lee Brennan, but are you taking away from the impact of somebody coming off the bench? Absolutely, because he's a live wire, so he is, and he's a player capable of getting a goal as well.
Yeah, I think McShane could be under pressure for his position. I don't think he's played well in a while. Would it be fair in saying that if you're looking at McGeary or you're looking at Lee Brennan, I think the one player in that forward line, I think Mark Bradley's going to start. Richie Donnelly could be under pressure too. Like, I mean, he hasn't had
that Richie Donnelly has. He's got physique. He's a big player, so he is, and he's not. He's a young player as well, and we have to remember that too. He's not one of those imposing full fours that really takes a game by the scruff of the neck yet, but I think he will develop into that type of player. But I would still go with him, because he does pose that threat with a high ball into to the full forward line. But, you know, I think McShane is the player that's under pressure there. He's one of those, you know, 15 players that's a really good player, but just not at that level, and hasn't been playing particularly well over the last couple of games. So he is probably going to be a player that's going to be under threat
They do like him from they give him an option for kickouts. That's one thing that they do like McShane for. I thought we definitely saw Niall Morgan show us that he's got a fair old array of kickouts there. The interesting thing will be Tyrone, whether they're going to push up strong on Began. Like, they won't. Tyrone are too conservative for that. You won't see an aggressive press up. You'll almost see a concession. Like, I mean, what's the point in giving Beggin that one to midfield? Tyrone, that'll scare the
midfield.
Day, like,
it's to the centre half forward.
Yeah,
position,
sometimes.
So it is,
yeah.
You know, and with a player like Megan Nesby running on it with his speed, you can't afford to leave yourself wide open like that there. Beggin has got the longest kick in the country, so don't leave yourself isolated like that. Tyrone won't do that. So they'll be pressing to an extent, but they'll be leaving bodies back there to make sure that they're not left wide open as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, you'd nearly hope Beggin hits the corner back a lot of the time, would you? Like, I mean, is it? Are you better off
if you're Tyrone?
If you're Tyrone,
yeah, you take that away. He's a weapon for Martin, so you do take that away from him. And up in Omagh, that was one of the strengths, was Beggin's performance. They had so much primary ball, and Morgan's underperformance, but it was just because he was under so much pressure, and Monaghan just won so many breaks in off the back of what he was doing.
So because of the threat of McManus inside, and because of the threat of Beggin, Tyrone won't press up with everybody. There'll be a sweeper left, I think, full time behind. So Tyrone will be trying to press with one less player up there, and they'll be doing this splitting kind of thing, and, you know, trying to stay half and half between everybody. But it'll definitely, I'd say Tyrone would be happy enough for him to just to chip it to one of the Wileys.
Now, the only thing, like, what Monaghan are good at, of course, it comes back to Beggin then, and then he'll carry it out and look to pump passes
outside
down
of the boot.
He's a serious pass outside the boot as well. It's unreal.
Do you ever see evidence of teams, say, leaving a cornerback kind of free out near the sideline?
Let him have it.
But then three lads light completely close off his kind of, you know, three lads kind of say he's looking to, basically, if he gets it out over the sideline, he can only really run up the sideline. But it's easy kind of corner him on the inside and then out in front of him and kind of push him out over the line. Do you know what I mean? You never really see that too much, do you?
You don't see it. Why Shepherd him up if you had somebody capable in cornerback of given a good kick pass, for instance. Ryan Wiley is a player that can pass the ball, you know, so if he just sees that happening and overlooks, and then all of a sudden Monaghan are on the attack with maybe players coming off the shoulder as well. So I think Monaghan, if they can get the ball beyond midfield and on a few occasions really commit to taking one or two thrown players on to try to create a foul, then they've got a serious weapon with Beggin coming up to kick freeze from midfield up, you know, absolute serious weapon. This game for me will boil down to free kicks. Absolutely will boil down to free kicks.
I think it will.
And I think with Morgan come up last week and kicked a couple of frees and kicked them well over the bar, but McCallisky against Conor McManus, there's only one winner there. Beggin against Morgan, there's only one winner there. And for me, you know, Monaghan have the ace cards.
That'll make the big deal. Now, that's obviously unless Lee Brennan starts. He's a very good free taker. So, like, I mean, I do take your point, McCallisky. It's an unbelievable throne are as far as they are without any specialist free taker. Like, without a free taker you can trust. Like, I mean, they don't have that. Mm-hmm. They don't have a free taker. Isn't it incredible they're running up the scores they are, and they're in All-Ireland semi-final, and I think we'll end up winning it without a specialist free taker. It'll come back to haunt them. Like, they won't beat Dublin. Like, I mean, it's a dream world if you think they can beat Dublin. But mentally, I think they're the best team to beat Dublin out of the four. But I don't think they don't have the game. We'll get Paddy Power predictions here, lads. So we'll start with Dublin and Galway. So Dublin are 1-7. It's unreal in an All-Ireland semi-final. Galway are 11-2, and the handicap here is 6. So this is on Saturday evening at 5 o'clock. So I might go to this and have a few pints in Dublin afterwards and just enjoy it. Can't enjoy All Ireland final anymore with the podcast. So All Ireland semi final on a Saturday.
Going like your heart out.
I might go Galway plus 6 or something. Like, Dublin will win. I just think it'll be tight, like, on Galway's league performance. Their consistency throughout the year, no matter what everybody else is saying, shouldn't be sort of taken for granted. They know what they're at. They have a system as good as anybody's apart from Dublin.
Yeah.
I just think they'll keep it tight anyway. They'll have enough chances to hurt them too, but they won't have enough to win.
I think they'll hurt them. I think that's the great thing about Galway, that we can be sure. Now, this is if Galway played the way we're hoping that they play. Absolutely hurt them.
Yeah.
If Donegal can hurt them, if Laois can hurt them, surely, like, Galway can hurt them. They have the forwards.
Yeah.
Burke is alive, where Comer's brilliant, Walsh. Those three, who's better than them in the country? Like, well, you're talking
if
only if Dublin and Kerry that can compete
if
with
Tone
that.
If those three players up front.
Oh, well, then you give them a great chance of
absolutely,
winning.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know?
So that's why you've got to give Galway a great opportunity. I think there's goals in them. there's goals in Galway.
They have to get goals. Yeah,
they have to go for goals, and there is goals in them, and that's why I think they'll beat the handicap. They'll not beat Dublin, but they'll beat the handicap. Dublin just know how to see these type of games out. They know even when the pressure's on, they will not panic. They'll stick to doing what they are doing best. And go back to your point, Colin, earlier on, the basics of the game, they have them perfected, absolutely perfected, and that's what gets most teams over the line when it comes down to winning games of this magnitude. And Dublin just have the, you know, they have the squad to go and do it.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt Dublin have match winners and leaders, and they've proven themselves to have, if somebody's not a leader and a match winner, somebody else will be.
Costello, if they're in bother.
Costello to come off the bench, yeah. And like, I mean, they only have a 6-day turnaround. They're the only team that has a 6-day turnaround, because Dublin played on Sunday. Wasn't it Sunday Dublin played?
Yeah
it was on Sunday.
Eight changes or something?
Yeah, they made 8 changes, but they still had 7 players, right? So they had 7 players that will be playing next week. So Cluxton will play. Fitzsimons might be borderline. Keane O'Sullivan, Philly McMahon, John Small, they'll all start. Jack McCaffrey. Jack McCaffrey really is the only one in the forwards, nearly a second class. James McCarthy came off the bench. Like, they will be still tired. Like, yeah. I mean, it is. It's 6 days. It's not. Ah, look, it's only, okay, suppose, one
listen,
day.
You're looking at the fittest team in the country. 6 days, yeah, no problem then.
If I was them as well, I'd rather have played that game against Roscommon than Mark Costello and the like.
Well, that's the truth. Every team, every single team would have an A versus B. And, like, I mean, a championship match, again, we spoke about, will take an awful lot more out of you. But a championship match against Roscommon that you win easily in Croke Park, that you play there all the time, like, it's almost like a routine game.
And you're already
Dublin.
Top of the group. It doesn't actually matter.
You're already top of the group, so there's nothing riding on it. And you're in your home ground, let's be honest. And, like, Dublin don't... I wouldn't say Dublin get too nervous playing in Croke Park, because it's just routine. It's safe for them at this stage. Anyways, I'll go for Galway plus 6 as well. And I think that's kind of my heart overruling my head, because you remember last year, and we all talked about Tyrone, they'll put it up to Dublin to beat them in the league, and they're always able to do them in the league. A feckin' league game in April where it's raining. Like, Dublin in the championship and Norris and Vanna are a completely different animal, and even mentally, the intensity they bring to those games, these are fellas that saunter through the league on the back of a holiday and are only getting warmed up, and they're only getting warmed up, like I'd say, during the Leinster Championship, even though Jim Gavin will always say to take every Leinster Championship game and everyone's a great team, etc. But this is Dublin now. This is Dublin at their peak intensity levels. Whether they hit form or not is another story, but at intensity levels, this is Dublin's A game.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, the league game, league final, I'm writing off completely. You know what I mean? I'm nearly based the 6 off Donegal causing them a lot of problems, and Galway, for me, being better than Donegal. Like, you know, it's nearly... and Galway hopefully going for goals and getting one or two goals. And, like, and it being...
they have to go for goals,
2-13 to 1-19 or something like that. And you know what I mean? Or something kind of scoreline like that. That's what I would be looking at. Don't put a lot of money on that scoreline. Disclaimer.
But do you know what the most depressing thing was about that game in Omagh against Tyrone? Is how up for a Dublin war. Like, Johnny Cooper diving all over the place. Yeah. How do you still care that much?
No, that cared... no, they cared about that, because if they had lost that, every match they won in Croke Park, a shadow would have been put over it. Dublin had to win that. Like, that was merely the most important game of the 5 years. Or else all their All-Ireland wins. It's like, well, they can't... look what happened up in Omagh. Even future All-Irelands will be thrown into doubt. Exactly, like, they had to prove they were the big...
point,
they had to prove they were the big dogs up in Omagh. There's no doubt about that. So they were really up for it. Monaghan Tyrone, this is a much more difficult one. Monaghan, according to Paddy Power, are 11-8 outsiders, and Tyrone are 4-5 favourites. Personally, I don't see where that is. I bow down to Paddy Power's superior odd setting to mine, but I have this as 50-50 game. I can't decide who I'm going to win. Now, the handicap's only 1, so that's not going to help you very much. I'm going for Tyrone, only based on the fact that Tyrone are a cocky, arrogant, in your face team, and they've history of winning these games where Monaghan don't.
Listen, I would totally agree with everything you said there. 50-50%,
even though this current team has no history of winning these games.
No history,
you know?
But, you know, I spoke about the free takers playing a very, very important role. Still think that's going to be the case. Monaghan will not fear Tyrone whatsoever. They've got the best player in the country, Conor McManus. They've got the best goalkeeper in the country. They've got one of the best attacking wing half backs in the country. You know, they've got some of the finest players in the country at the minute playing football for them. But it's the arrogance that Tyrone have when they get to this distance. They've got one of the most astute managers in the game, Mickey Hart, who just knows, even when things go against him in earlier games, which they did against Monaghan, he knows how to crack them. And for me, it's very, very hard to call. I don't think it's going to be a draw. It's very hard to call, and I just think Throne's arrogance will just get them across the line, you know. And I'd really love to see Monaghan get to an All-Ireland final, because those players, the likes of Conor McManus and all, deserve to be playing on the highest scale ever, the highest level. But, you know, I just think Throne will have the know-how to get through this game.
Okay, Conan, what do you think? Now, obviously, this is, when we're saying this is a 50-50 game and we're leaning towards Tyrone, yeah, like, I wouldn't be in any way. This is one where, like, predictions are bullshit anyways. Yeah. Like, a normal Joe Soap out of the pub could get it right and you could get it wrong. Yeah. And we're meant to be experts. Like, I mean, there's no experts when it comes to predictions. Not in a 50-50 game.
No way. Come on and win, absolutely. Monaghan can win by 5 or 6 points in this game, you know.
I would love to cop out and say a draw, but I don't think it'll be a draw. But I don't know who's going to win. Like, somebody is going to win, and...
Right, I'll have to hurry you on there now. That's Cheddar on the phone there, lads, and we know how...
It's Cheddar, boy.
Just take your time. Just take your time there.
I'm going to go with Monaghan, and I'm going to go with them because they have a turn of some of the best players too. But Monaghan have some of the best players in the country, but they're in the best form of their lives.
Like, yep.
Began, O'Connell, and McManus particularly. Although McManus has gone on for 5 years at the minute, but... And I just think they've got those sort of trump cards when it comes down to it. It's going to be tight no matter what. And these boys could win the match for them. Like a Rory Began 65-metre free could win the match for them, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so you're going for Monaghan. Right, okay. Yeah. So 2 Tyrone, 1 Monaghan, but that's very, very... And we've all gone Galway plus the 6. Like, it's very hard. Predictions are hard,
yeah,
lads.
Yeah.
Don't. It's not an easy job, listeners, right? So don't come back saying, Wooly, you don't have a clue what you're talking about. Don't tell Stevie, because he's sensitive. You can say it to me. It's water off a duck's back.
You can say it to me, but don't write it.
All right, next up, we'll talk to Joe from Paddy Power. Joe, we're going to start with Dublin and Galway, and in the studio here, we're all in agreement, which is unusual, that Dublin are going to win, but we're all gone for Dublin plus 6. So we kind of have the handicap covered. Whether we're right or wrong is the next thing. But there's a few more there that you have written down here.
Yeah, there's just a few other ones to look at there potentially this weekend. So obviously you guys are all in agreement that it's going to be relatively tight anyway, with the plus 6 for... Is that the plus 6 for Galway and a minus 6 for Dublin?
We're going Dublin with a lead of 6, yeah. We think Galway will stay within the 6.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah. Well, as a dub myself now, you always get a bit more nervous the closer we get to the end of the championship. But I don't know, with Galway the last while, they've kind of flattered to the seas when it really gets down to the crucial points. I'm not sure about that myself now. But a couple other ones, if you do fancy a tight first half and Dublin to win, so we've Galway at half time and Dublin to win a full time is 5-1, or a draw at half time and Dublin to win a full time is 10-1. So if you do fancy Galway to give them a good rattle and Dublin to ultimately pull through in the second half, there's a bit of extra odds for you there.
Yeah, exactly.
And then go on. Yeah, and then just another one that we talked about last week with the Dublin to score first, lead at half time and win. So that's even there again. So if you're a big Dublin fan and you really fancy them to hit the ground running on Saturday evening there, that's evens, which should just give you a bit more bang for your buck if Dublin do want to win.
Yeah, that's a good one actually. Dublin, that one obviously worked for Dublin against Roscommon, but the odds weren't great in that one. So you're getting it on even money. Dublin to score first, lead at half time and win, which is even. Another one there that I like in this one is over 36.5 points, which you'd imagine with Dublin and Galway playing each other, that it should be above that, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, both teams have plenty of decent forwards and tend to score heavily enough. But I think if you're down by the form lines, and I know you hate league form, but if you look at the league final, it was actually quite a low scoring game. And if Galway decide to come this Saturday with a policy of containment and just try to stay in the match for as long as possible and hope they outlast Dublin, that under 36.5 points could actually come true. It's a tough one to tell. I think the game could go anyway at this stage. It really depends what Galway brings to the table, I think, on Saturday.
Yeah, I think that's right as well. We're kind of saying Galway should really kind of go for it. They've no chance without goals. So if Galway got goals, you'd imagine you'd go over that. So Monaghan-Tyrone.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Monaghan-Tyrone is a complete opposite. We're split on this one. 2 Tyrones, 1 Monaghan. What have you got for us here?
Yeah, well, I guess the when we're talking about the under-overs in the Dublin game, are probably more likely to see the unders come through in the Monaghan-Tyrone game.
Yeah.
I think last week that we discussed it, and Monaghan just totally strangled the life out of Galway. Obviously now once you get to Crowe Park, the pitch is a bit wider and it's a bit harder to go that route. But I think with both teams, I think they'll both nearly be so desperate to not lose. I know it's a bit harsh, but I think there'll be a very slow-paced first half, and they'll both be really feeling each other out for a long time because they know each other inside out at this stage, and I think it could be a fairly low-scoring game. And then similarly, as we talked about the half-time full-times in the Dublin match, if it was to be a draw at half-time and then Tyrone to win a full-time, that's 12-1, or a draw at half-time with Monaghan to win a full-time is 14-1. So if you're expecting a tough, tight first half and maybe a draw at half-time, then you can take your kind of winning team bet and get much longer odds on that happening anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And just on the under 35.5, is they've played in Croke Park twice in the last 5 years. 2013, it was 14-12, and 2015, it was 18-14. So both of those games came in under the 35. So maybe that is the bet. A really good one here is Rory Began for man of the match at 25-1, because if this is going to be a cagey affair, Freeze could win it. If his kickouts are up to scratch, plus some good long range Freeze in a cagey game, Rory Began at 25-1 looks like a fantastic bet.
Yeah, well, that's it. Kind of stood out to me there anyway. Man of the matches are a nightmare to pick at the best of times, but if you're expecting a tight, cagey affair where there's not too much free-flowing football, you could see Began trotting up the pitch to score 4 or 5 points. And if he gets kick-outs right on that wide Crow Park pitch, I mean, if he's hitting 90% and he scores a few points and Monaghan get over the line, there's absolutely no reason why he won't be right up the top of the list to get man of the match.
Yeah, as usual, we have the money-back specials on both semis. So if you've a free bet, if you're losing first time, goal scorer score at any time.
Yeah, people are probably sick of me trying to explain that one to them each week, but just a couple of ones this weekend maybe to look for, particularly in the Galway-Dublin game where you're probably expecting more goals like we discussed. Jack McCaffrey 16-1 to score the first goal, and we've seen him enough times in big games come absolutely bombing through the centre to get away, and while his finishing mightn't be the best in the world, he definitely gets those chances now and again, so 16-1 could be good for Jack. And Shane Walsh in that game is 14-1 for first goal scorer too, so two people maybe to watch there. And then Monaghan Tyrone game, like you just said, in those two results, the last two times they played in Crow Park, there were no goals in either, and no goal scorer this weekend for Monaghan Tyrone is 6-1. So
that's a good one. Yeah.
I can't see too many goals. Yeah, I can't see too many opportunities coming about either way. I mean, one goal could always fluke in, but 6-1 is not bad there for no goal.
A depressing bet is Dublin versus the field. Not depressing for you being a dub, but Dublin versus the field, it's not good reading for the field.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, well, Dublin are, we've from 3-1 on, or 1-3 in normal speak, and to win the All-Ireland. So you can take anyone from Galway, Tyrone, Monaghan. If anyone manages to knock Dublin off their perch this year and lift their 9-4. So any one of those three to beat Dublin and win the All-Ireland is 9-4.
Right, and I don't think anyone's going to be rushing out to do that even at 9-4.
No, I don't think so, no, but it gives you a few options anyway. Only one of them has to beat them.
Yeah, true. And then another one just on that line, Dublin to win 5 in a row next year, even more depressing for everybody and except for Dubs, is 5-4, and I think people would be rushing out to put money on that.
Yeah, potentially so. I mean, they're going to be fairly short to win next year, one way or the other. But yeah, if you're fancying them this year and you're looking at them going on for 5 in a row, I mean, Bernard Brogan's back in shape now. He's sort of the knee out. We've got Owen O'Gara and Kevin Whelan, all these guys still knocking around, as we saw in the Roscommon game. So their squad depth is absolutely not an issue looking ahead to next year. So just a little special that the trading floor put together there is just for Dublin to actually win that 5 in a row and complete it next year. It's 5-4.
Yeah, and it's even when you look around and see who the opposition is going to be is nearly the next question. A lot is going to be told in the next two games, whether, like, if Dublin win these next two games and beat the handicap in both, which is not beyond the bounds of possibility, then you would think that 5-4 is a great bet altogether. Quickly before we finish up, Eamon Fitzmaurice has obviously stepped down as Kerry manager, so you've opened up a book on who is going to replace him. I'm very happy not to see John Sugrue, the Laois manager, who's doing such a good job with Laois. He's not on your list here. Maybe you've only summarised the list for me here.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you go on the site there, if you go to the GAA specials, you'll see the full list. I mean, he's priced up nearly everyone and anyone. There's a few very long odds ones there, a few crazy ones. But no, all the kind of usual suspects are in there. I just put in a few of the topical ones for us there. with the favourite being Dermot Murphy. He's at even, so obviously there's a few whispers going around Kerry that he's going to be the one to take the job. But given the week that's been in it, and after hearing Fitzmaurice doing a bit of media and that, I'm surprised we don't have a market of no one taking the job, because it doesn't seem that appealing right now.
No.
given the abuse that's coming their way. But a few of the other usual suspects we have in there, I mean, Jack O'Connor, obviously he's already had two stints in a row, and he could be coming in again because he's obviously looked after a lot of those minors for the last few years, so he'd have a good relationship and bringing them through. He's a 10-3, and then some of the legends of Kerry football of old, so Maurice Fitzgerald is in there at 6-1, Seamus Moynihan 33-1, Dara and Tomás O'Shea are at 40-1, and Pat Spillane, I saw him touting himself for the Kildare manager's job on Sunday game there recently enough. if he fancied giving Kerry a spin, if he was given the reins, he's coming in at 50-1 there to be the next manager.
Coming in at 50-1, so I think that's it's a pretty long shot. Right, Joe, thanks very much for all of that, and we'll talk to you at the Thursday, I suppose, before the All-Ireland now at this stage. Right, listen, that's always time for this week, and we're going to be back on... When are we back? On Monday. Jesus, I'm losing my head here. It's been a long hour. So we'll be back on Monday with a review show as usual. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back to their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.